across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet, by webcast and by podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Thank you for coming back to the show. Thank you very much for the flood of very nice emails that I've had, not only about my situation, but also about my father, who I told you on the last show had suffered a very severe stroke, and we're all very concerned about him, and so are you too. I think it's really kind in this world of ours, when we've all got our problems, economic and in every other way, that you take time to think about me and think about my dad. Thanks very much. Now, in my life, work continues very hard. Just started a new morning gig in London that is, quite difficult so far, one way and another. But I promise you that I will continue to do these shows. Vital, I think, that we get this information out there. Now, here we are, beginning of 2012, and we're looking down the barrel of a whole new year. Nobody knows politically, economically, and in every other way how things are going to transpire. Lots of people making predictions. Nobody really knows, I don't think. And I was casting around the other night, just thinking to myself, who could we talk to here on The Unexplained to get a handle on everything, to give us some real perspective? And it came to me. It's high time we did a talk with David Icke. It's about a year since we last spoke with him, and he is controversial. I know that some of you love him, and some of you hate him, but the fact of the matter is that across the world, millions of people follow everything this man says. Now, he was condemned in Britain at the beginning of his career, I guess you could call it. He was a journalist first, TV sports reporter, very well known, and then took a completely different path. And the British tabloid media, which is known for these things, castigated him back in the 1980s. They called him a potty prophet, a crackpot, all sorts of things, a guru, a fake. He's had all kinds of abuse. But over the years, he's toughed it out. He's published many books on many themes, and he is always, especially in North America, in demand. In fact, he's back on tour again in places like Hawaii later this year, with a whole new tour about discovering who you really are. I'm going to ask him about that. But I just thought, with this world upside down as we start 2012, with a year of protest movements behind us, who knows what is to come politically in this world? And, you know, who knows what's going to happen with this planet that we live on? We had earthquakes and all sorts of problems and very strange weather. As I speak to you now, it's almost springtime in London. The spring flowers are out. You know, I think we couldn't do better than talk with David Icke about it and get his take on it. So let's do that in just a moment. We're going to cross to his home on the Isle of Wight, south of England, and have a conversation with David Icke. Just to say thank you again for all the emails. Keep them coming to www.theunexplained.tv, www.theunexplained.tv. There you'll find a link to me, and you can email me direct there with guest suggestions, which I am working on, any thoughts about the show, anywhere where you think that I can improve, whatever you want to say, or if you want to leave a donation, you can do that on the website too, www.theunexplained.tv. Thanks as usual to Adam Cornwell for great work on the website. He's at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool. Thanks to Martin for the theme tune. And above all, thank you to you for keeping the faith and for driving this show forward. We're going to get there in 2012. Let's cross to the Isle of Wight now, here on this edition of The Unexplained, and talk with David Icke. David, good to have you back on.
No problem, Howard. Nice to talk to you again.
How's the Isle of Wight?
Well, I haven't seen much of it, mate, in the last little while. I've been on a world speaking tour to Australia, America, and to Europe. And so it's been a long time since I've had much time here. But I've got a bit of time now. It's nice to stop moving.
It must be. And I see that you've got a tour booked, for the end of this year? And I looked at some of the dates that you've got. You've got Hawaii coming up. It's all kicking off October or so, isn't it, thereabouts?
Yeah, well, it's funny. This is going to be a different year for me, because I think I'll probably, you know, again, not be on the Isle of Wight very much in 2013, the way things are going. But 2012 is an interesting year for me. It's just panning out, as they say, in a different way because of other things that I'm doing.
Well, that's why I wanted to talk today, because you know that full-time I do this news job in London.
Right.
And I've spent a lot of time covering the protest movement, all the backlash against the bankers or the banksters, whatever you want to call them, and all that other stuff, and all the other upheavals we seem to be going through at the moment. And ordinary people, I'm not talking about people who are in the media at all, I'm talking about ordinary people who talk to me in normal conversation. are having trouble getting a handle on what's going on. They have a feeling and a thought that there is something going on, and this is where we left off our last conversation about a year ago. But they don't know quite what it is. And that's why I thought I would talk to you, because I thought if anybody might have a handle on it, seriously, you might.
Well, it's funny because I spent the summer writing a book against a real tight deadline because of all the traveling. And it's coming out very shortly, and it's called Remember Who You Are. And it's interesting you should ask that question, because one of the main motivations for the book was because I'd come across this phenomenon that you describe all over the world, where people were just saying, look, I don't like the way the world's going. What's happening? And I've written the book to explain in a big dot connecting way what is happening and how what's happening in North Africa and the Middle East connects into additives in food, connects into 2012 and all this stuff. So it's only when you connect the dots that you can actually see what's happening. Otherwise, it's just like a mass of individual happenings. And it's like, what's happening? What's going on?
Well, all these things seem to be happening spontaneously in different places, like the Arab Spring and like the demonstrations we've had here and like the ones they had on Wall Street and even places like Cape Town. You know, it all looks like they're random happenings in different places. But there seems to be, and I think this is what is perplexing people, there seems to be a thread that pulls things together. In half the time, I can't believe that I'm saying things like this. You know, half the time, I feel like that TV newscaster on that old movie Network, Peter Finch played the part, and he leant out of the window and he shouted, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore. Network, great movie. And sometimes I feel like that.
It was a great movie, and the greatest part of its greatness, if you like, is that it was true. You know, when you look at what's happening in the Middle East and in North Africa, for instance, I've been writing now since back into the 1990s about the plan for a third world war, and that it was planned to come out of the Middle East in a trigger situation between Israel and some Arab countries. And this is what they're leading to now. It's this progression that's going on. See, you need to go back to the so-called revolutions in Eastern Europe, like in Ukraine, in Georgia, and places like that. And you find that behind those, in truth, were a series of organizations, and they specialize in triggering apparently spontaneous people's revolutions, because you can attack a country and bring about what they call regime change, but if you do it too often, then, you know, people go, hold on a second, what's going on? So it's better, if you can, is to get a situation where you have the illusion of people protesting and thus changing the regime, but you make sure that at the end of it, who you want in power is in power. This is what happened in Eastern Europe. And so if we then come down to Egypt and we have this so-called spontaneous revolution in Egypt, which, as I said at the time, is not a revolution at all, because all that's changed is Mubarak's gone. And what you find is that the Open Society Institute and the International Crisis Group were involved in that, and that the United States government, working through their embassy in Cairo, for years before, was orchestrating, arranging for training, and even flying to the United States for meetings, these people that eventually triggered the so-called revolution.
All right, David, how do you know that? Who told you that? How do you know it?
Well, this is from research, detailed research, and you put the tapestry together by researching the strands and putting them together. But this is it's even been admitted by a group, a couple of guys, who in around the year 2000 were orchestrating the People's Revolution, or at least in part, against Milosevic, which again was in the former Yugoslavia, which was orchestrated in the background again in the way that I'm talking about. And there's a guy called Popovich, another one called Maravich, and they created organizations called Canvas and Otpor. Otpor means resistance. And they, since that situation with Milosevic, have gone on working out of Serbia as a training organizations for these people who are then triggering, on behalf of this cabal, these people's revolutions. And Popovic has come out publicly and said that they trained the key people that triggered the initial protests, etc., in Egypt. Maravich from Otpor has been at the Wall Street protests speaking there. And the Otpor logo is the clenched fist. And that's why you see this clenched fist so often as the logo of these groups that trigger these people's revolutions.
All right, so let's boil it down to its very, very basics, David, if we can.
April the 6th youth movement, which was fundamental in triggering the revolution in or so-called revolution in Egypt, had the clenched fist as its logo. Soon as the people went to the streets in Cairo, and this is how it operates, Howard. First of all, for years and years and years, you orchestrate the fact that a group of people are fundamentally suppressed and treated appallingly with violence and economic suppression. Therefore, you get people very angry, very resentful, and they want to do something. They've had enough. And let's not forget that the major funder by a mile of regime that the people were protesting against was the United States. They were funding quite in the public arena to incredible amounts of money the Egyptian military that was imposing the violent suppression of Mubarak. And all that's happened is Mubarak's gone, but that army is still in place. And when the American government says jump, the Egyptian army breaks the Olympic high jump record.
But David, if this is all to be believed,
I must finish this line because I'm going somewhere with this.
All right.
And so you have the agents provocateurs who trigger and exploit this resentment, this mass resentment at what's happened to the people in general. And they go onto the streets, completely understandably, and the vast majority of them are genuine in their anger. So as soon as that started, a guy got on a plane in Europe called Emmanuel El-Baradei, not Emmanuel El-Baradei, Mohammed El-Baradei, and he headed for Cairo. And within days, you might remember, Mohammed El-Baradei, former head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, he was one of the leaders of the bloody revolution. Where did this man come from? Well, it turns out that before he got on the plane, he was a board member of the international crisis group that specialize in triggering people's revolutions and then making sure their guy or people are in place at the end of them. And El-Baradei is now saying he wants to stand for president and all this stuff. And it's orchestrated. And what they're doing, what they did in Libya was the same. They armed these people. This is why there's videos on YouTube of the so-called rebels in Benghazi opening bloody boxes of brand new guns and weaponry, and they wanted to sell the idea that there was this big revolution and all this stuff was going on to justify the boys going in. NATO, the world army that I've been talking about for bloody nearly 20 years, was coming to take over Libya and Libya's oil and Libya's banking system, and they've devastated that country for generations and generations. Now they're doing exactly the same as I said they would, publicly in Syria. They're doing the same job on them. It's orchestrated. This whole thing is orchestrated. And now the big prize all along in that area of the world is Iran. And thus now they're trying to demonize Iran with endless bloody things that they're coming up with, laughable, many of them, to try to justify the same deal happening in Iran. It's orchestrated. And, you know, I've been saying for years and years and years, right back into the mid-90s, that they were heading in their plan for a third world war that involved the NATO countries, Europe, North America, of course, the Australians and New Zealand will be pulled in too, as usual, in a conflict against Russia and China. And now we have a situation where China is getting closer and closer to Russia militarily. They're saying publicly, in effect, mess with Pakistan and you mess with us. Mess with Iran and you mess with us. The pieces are being moved around exactly as I was talking about back in the 90s. And this is what's going on. And this is why the people you talk about, that you speak to, that the world events make no sense to them. How can it be any sense whatsoever for America to be absolutely beyond belief bankrupt? And the only way they keep going for a little while longer is to keep raising the debt limit that they're allowed to borrow according to their own laws. While at the same time, if you add all hidden costs in, America is spending something like $1 trillion a year on the military and external buddy wars. Now, this makes no sense when Americans, and I can tell you, I've come back from there recently, are increasingly losing their homes and living in tent cities. That makes no sense if the American government is trying to do what's best for the American people. It makes no sense for the American military to do what it's doing if the American military is serving the American people. But it's not. The American military is simply the military of this global cabal, paid for by American taxpayers and debt, orchestrating and following this agenda for a series of events leading to World War III.
And what possible gain would they get from World War III, apart from an awful lot of destruction?
Well, that's what they want, an awful lot of destruction. If you want to change the world in your image, then you have to get rid of the status quo. It's very simple.
All right, I accept that point, but let me ask you about Iran. You mentioned Iran there, and I've got to bring you up on this one because it's in the news at the moment.
Let me ask you a question. What do they gain by looking at World War One? The world after World War One was in phenomenally fewer hands in terms of power and control than it was before. After World War Two, it was even dramatically in fewer hands. And we had all these global institutions like the World Bank, the Bretton Woods Agreement, the IMF, and all these things.
There was lots of consolidation, and it's still going on. But we had to get rid of Hitler, didn't we? We couldn't just leave him there exterminating people, could we?
Well, who was behind Hitler?
Who was behind Hitler? You think a cabal was behind him?
Well, this is in the public domain. Hitler's race purity movement was funded and guided out of America and Britain by not least the House of Rockefeller. The Harriman Empire in America was also very much into eugenics, and they funded a guy called Ernst Rudin to have a whole floor of a German university to develop his grotesque race purity programs. And when you read the immense research that's available, the Nazis were funded out of places like Britain and America. And one of the funders, this is in the public domain now, was an organization called the UBC, the Union Banking Corporation. This was a Harriman operation in America, and it interfaced with the steel and banking empire of a guy called Fritz Thyssen, who was a known funder of the Nazis. And through this connection, money was funneled through the UBC to Fritz Thyssen's network in Europe and Germany to fund the Nazi war machine. This is how Germany, think about it, went from a Weimar Republic where people were taking their wages home in wheelbarrows because the inflation was beyond imagination. And then in a few years, they're taking on Europe militarily. Where did that come from? It came from external sources. Now, who was the guy running the UBC in America? Prescott Bush, the grandfather of Boy Bush and the father of Father Bush.
So you're telling us that the common conception of World War II that's been portrayed in all the books that I read at school about it, that it was the views of one man developed because partly of his own inadequacies and hatred of a certain group of people, you're telling me that it was nothing to do with him just tapping into the spirit of the time and locking into the public sentiment and off you go, as we've seen so many times across the globe before. One person comes up, they tap into this zeitgeist and off they go. Nothing to do with that.
Well, you say that, Howard. You say these individuals come up and tap into something. How do you know that? You only know the official story that you were told at school.
True enough. I mean, I've read it. I've studied it. That's what I do know.
And all the rest of it. Now, I was talking about and writing about this funding of Hitler from the Union Banking Corporation, the Bush family, the Harriman family, the Rockefellers, etc., and the Rothschilds, way back in the 90s in a book called And the Truth Shall Set You Free, which I actually wrote in 1994. Now, many, many years later, a guy called John Loftus, who is I think he's the president, and that's his title, of the Holocaust Museum in Florida and a former investigator of Nazi war crimes for the U.S., I think it was the State Department that he worked directly for, he came out and went public in a speech and said that much of the Bush family money came from supporting the Nazis. And he came out with the same stuff that I'd come out with years ago, and other people have too researching this. And I've just explained now. This is what's happening. You know, these people like Hitler and Stalin, they don't come to power out of nothing. They're front people. It's the cabal, it's the network that puts them there. I mean, there is endless research now that Lenin and Trotsky and the Russian Revolution were funded by the House of Rothschild through one of their operations in America called Kuhn, Loeb & Company, that was headed by a guy called Jacob Schrift. And the Schrift family actually lived in the same house as the Rothschilds in Frankfurt at one point. And so world events are only what you see and are told to see through the mainstream media. And I worked in the mainstream media for a long time in newspapers, in radio.
I'm still there, David.
In television, I know. But I'll tell you from bloody experience, most journalists haven't got a clue what's going on in the world. To most journalists, or what passed for them, investigative journalism is reading the morning papers and watching the newsroom telly.
All right, let me take you to Iran, because it's very, very important. It's highly topical, as you know, because something seems to be kicking off in Iran. We seem to be being steered in that direction. You don't believe that Iran has an illicit nuclear weapons program and one of these days is going to do something stupid with it. You don't think that?
No. End of story. But if you are going to justify yet another, for goodness sake, make a list of the countries that have been attacked and pepper bombed in the last few years. And while you're making the list, go into Google Images and put in Sirte or Tripoli, Libya mass bombing, and see the death and destruction of men, women, and children. Here we have the ludicrous situation where to justify the mass pepper bombing of civilian cities, you say we must protect the civilians from violence. the excuses are now becoming more and more and more insane, more ludicrous, more blatantly nonsensical. And it's being just, if they're coming out with these excuses because they're desperate to push their agenda on of acquiring more and more and more countries and resources. Now, this guy, Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is a major insider player and manipulator, Jimmy Carter's former national security advisor. Now, let's look at him. He actually went public in a French news magazine a few years ago and admitted that he, as national security advisor, spent U.S. taxpayers' money to train and arm a group of so-called freedom fighters in Afghanistan, which would later morph into the Mujahideen and the Taliban. And he said he did that because at that point, the government in Kabul was a satellite of the Soviet Union. He wanted to create a situation in Afghanistan in which the government in Kabul would be under threat from this, you know, revolution, if you like, which he was funding and training and arming, and to draw the Soviet Union into invading Afghanistan. And this is the words he used in this interview for this news magazine, to give them their Vietnam. Because he wanted to draw them in, because he knew that, you know, taking on Afghanistan is a war of attrition and would just be an absolute nightmare.
But isn't what you're talking about the game of power politics? Isn't that the way things have always been done? If you want to get rid of somebody you don't like, you don't necessarily have to send the tanks in there. You don't have to be that, you know, unsmart. What you do is you create some kind of organization or some kind of political movement. You give it some money, you give it some weapons, and then you get your desired effect. That's nothing to do with world domination. That's just the game of politics, is it not?
I know you're trying to play devil's advocate, mate, but I mean, please, a few years ago, even a decade or so ago, you know, something like that might have stood up. But just look what's happening in the world and what's happening since. All these things that are happening one after the other. Oh, we've got Syria. We've got Libya now. OK, Syria. Oh, that Assad, he's just the same and all the rest of it.
But do you not accept that these days, I mean, you've used it yourself. You are a great user of the media, the modern media. You don't need the mainstream media anymore because you've got a great website, you can reach people directly, and modern communication has allowed you, David Icke, to do that. Can you not accept that perhaps some of these events that we've seen over this last period, strange though they may seem, perturbing to people like me, though they may be, because, you know, it's amazing that they happen all at once, and it is very tempting to think there's something behind all of this. However, what we have now is the internet, we have Skype, we have mobile phones like you've never had before, satellite television, so do you not accept at least partly the theory that some guy in Egypt thinks, up with this, I will not put any more. I'm tired of being pushed around. I'm tired of the corruption. I'm tired of all the garbage. I can't make a living for myself. I'm going to set myself on fire. And there you torch a conflagration of popular sentiment just through one person. That gets coverage. That goes around the world. And this is what happens.
Well, that's it again. Okay. That's it. We won't go any further then, shall we? I mean, you know, it's all explained.
Well, I don't know. That's what I'm asking you.
I've been on this. I've been researching this full time for 22 years. I've been to nearly 60 countries. After all that, in answer to your question, can I think that this is not orchestrated? No, I can't, because I know the blueprint and I can read the signs so easily because the blueprint keeps repeating itself, because if it works, why change it? But let's go on with Brzezinski. One of the things that he needed, and that the Reagan Bush administration that followed, actually the Bush Reagan administration in truth, needed was a focal point for this thing in Afghanistan. And they found him. He was called Osama bin Laden. And he was brought very, very close to the Saudi royal family. The bin Laden family are very, very close to people like Father George Bush. And in came Osama bin Laden as a focal point to fight the Soviet Union. And when a million Afghans had died, and goodness knows how many Soviet Union troops, the Soviet Union withdrew and left all these groups that Brzezinski now has admitted he helped to create and fund and train to do what they've done since. And a lot of that, by the way, that's attributed to them is not them at all, like 9/11 and all this bloody nonsense. But so we have a history, as they say, endless history of people representing this cabal manipulating countries to bring about certain ends. And when you look at the story I've just told in about Afghanistan, that's what happened in Libya. That's what's happening as I speak in Syria. This is all orchestrated. And this is why it is coming together in the blatantly obvious way it is, because it's orchestrated and is not spontaneous.
All right. Spiritually, because I know you have an interest in these things too. This is 2012. The Mayans said it was all going to... Well, if you believe the interpretation of what the Mayans said, it was all going to end this year. There are many people talking about ascension. We're all going to change. Some people are going to leave this planet this year. I mean, you read interpretations of 2012 and, you know, I can give you a dozen straight off now and I've just got to go on the computer for 2 minutes. What do you think spiritually is happening to us as a human race this year?
Well, I think there's enormous amounts of garbage being spoken about 2012, and I think a lot of it's again orchestrated because the greatest thing to get people in, if you want to dictate to them and get them to accept it, is fear. I had my extraordinary experiences, we might call paranormal experiences, well documented now, in 1990-91. And I wrote and published a book that came out in early 1991 called Truth Vibrations. And it's called Truth Vibrations because what I was understanding at that time was that there was a transformation, as I would call it now, of the information fabric of at least this part of the universe unfolding, and that this would have the effect of teasing open. It would be like an information vibrational waveform version of the hypnotist snapping his fingers and waking up the stooge on the stage, so suddenly they can see a completely different reality, and that people were going to wake up in eventually vast numbers and see themselves and the world in completely different ways. And the other major effect, or another major effect, was that all that was hidden was going to be brought to the surface where people could see it. Now, I'm not saying this in hindsight, Howard. I said and wrote this at the time, what, nearly 22, 21 years ago. And at the time, there was absolutely no evidence for this whatsoever. But as the years have unfolded, especially, in the last few, it's become more and more obvious. And being on this world tour in 2011, it was blatantly obvious that vast, vast numbers of people are waking up and seeing themselves and the world in a completely different way. I mean, when you can go to the Gold Coast in Australia, which is not even a city, it's like a resort area, and 2,000 people turn up, from every walk of life, because that's what my audiences are now, from every walk of life, every age, race, background, all of it. Because this is the stuff I'm talking about, and the stuff particularly we're talking about now, is universal. It affects the lives of every single man, woman, and child on the planet. And so it's blatantly obvious, like I say, that this awakening is happening. I remember when I started writing on the internet about this stuff. There's virtually nothing. Now look at it. It's unbelievable the amount of information that's available.
There is still a lot of skepticism, though. Over the Christmas holiday, this won't mean much to people in the US, but you'll know what I'm going to talk about. You were on the Terry Wogan talk show on the television back in the 80s, and he said over the Christmas period when he was interviewed, Desert Island Discs was the show, by the way, you might have heard it, he talked about the interview with you, and he said, the man came on there, and he professed himself to be the Son of God. Where do you go from there? And you had a rematch with him, of course, quite recently, didn't you? But, you had to undergo, and you had to suffer a certain amount of ridicule, which, let's face it, you still do. I mean, I mentioned in the office today that I was interviewing you, and some people were very, very interested that I was because they'd looked at your stuff online, and some people were, what's the word, dismissive. You still have to face that stuff, don't you? Even though people are waking up and asking questions, as you say. And I think, you know, there's not a lot of doubt about that. People are asking more questions than ever. Nevertheless, the stuff that you say is often hard for people to take. It's not palatable for them, even now.
Well, it's palatable for increasingly large numbers of people. But you see, what some journalist in some newspaper or radio station who's never done a day's proper research in his life thinks of me from his concrete-minded box is completely and utterly irrelevant. Why should I in any way be concerned what someone like that writes about me or thinks about me or says about me? I couldn't care less.
I don't think I've ever asked you, you know. I was younger when that TV program. I don't want to harp on this because we've talked about it before, but let's just get it out the way now. You know, when I heard that interview, this reference to being I am the Son of God, did you say that at the time? I don't recall that, but did you?
What I was talking about is that, and you know, you've got to appreciate, if you want to understand what's going on there, that I had just had the most extraordinary series of experiences, which had the effect on me of, imagine you're living in a bubble, and the information and perceptions that you have of self in the world are gleaned from the information that's available in that bubble. And then, without any warning, someone comes along and pops the bubble. And suddenly, information, concepts, perceptions, all this stuff absolutely tsunamis into your mind. I've described it like when a dam bursts, before the dam bursts, the water's in some kind of, you know, stability and calm, and then when the dam bursts, then all hell breaks loose until the water finds balance and calm in the new situation. And I went on the Wogan show in that interim period, and so it was like I've described it since, a situation where you press too many keys on a keyboard and the computer says, I can't process all this, I'm freezing. And I had so much stuff pouring into my conscious mind as a result of what happened to me that my computer froze and said, I cannot compute this.
And did you use the words, I'm the Son of God?
Well, what I was saying was, because it became very clear to me immediately that this process started, is that everything is an expression of the same one infinite awareness. I don't care if it's a tree or a human or whatever. They're all different expressions of the same infinite awareness. And what I was trying to say, but of course saying it in the state I've just described, is that we're all sons and daughters of God. In other words, If you want to use the word God for this infinite consciousness, I don't. I mean, you call it Ethel if you like. It doesn't matter. It's just a name. Then we are all expressions, indeed beyond expressions, of this one infinite consciousness.
And on a live TV interview on an entertainment show, trying to explain that concept in just a couple of minutes, I guess, can be interpreted
impossible.
As I've just been the Son of God.
I've just been asked to go on that This Morning program to talk about various things they want me to talk about. And I said, how long? They said 9 to 10 minutes. I said, really? I'm not, it's a waste of time. Mm. Waste of time.
I don't know how you, I mean, look at the length of time we've spent now. I don't know how you begin to boil it down. I mean, look, 2012 we're talking about, and you're talking about people waking up. Well, a lot of people are telling me that spiritually people are being more questing at the moment, and even intellectually they're being more questing. I don't think there's any doubt about that fact. You said people are waking up. What's being woken up? And if you can tell me easily, how's it being woken up?
Well, I make the distinction in my books between what I call body-mind and what I call consciousness. Consciousness is the infinite part of us, and body-mind is the interface that allows that consciousness to interact and experience a range of frequencies, which science calls visible light. It's a tiny, tiny range of frequencies, which are the only, it's the only frequency range that our five senses can, or certainly visually, can decode, can experience. Everything outside of that range of frequencies is beyond it. It's like you're on a television station, and so you experience the television station. You don't experience all the other television stations because you're not on the dial, the frequency dial, to experience them. And you have a situation where the universe is broken up into different ranges of frequency. Actually, it's more complicated. Not complicated, but there's more to explain than that. Let's keep it.
All right. So there's stuff that we can see and stuff that we can't.
There's the visible universe, which is tiny, tiny compared with the universe that exists, and then there is the invisible universe, which is the rest of it. And mainstream science talks in terms of dark matter and dark energy, and it says that the electromagnetic spectrum is something like 0.005% of what exists in this universe. Some scientists say more, but not more, not much more. And it's sobering to think that visible light, which is the only frequency range we can perceive, is a fraction of the 0.005% of the electromagnetic spectrum. So as someone rightly said, humans are basically blind in terms of seeing what there is to see.
So if we could see and perceive it all, what are we missing? What are we not experiencing?
Oh, we're missing multiple other levels and expressions of what we call life. We're talking about intelligence in different forms to us. Eventually, you're looking at intelligence, consciousness, not even in form. But in terms of what's going on now, it's the same equivalent. I call the universal field the cosmic internet, because it works in the same way. It operates, its basis is a waveform information field. And it's works like the internet that we interact with in its basis.
Well, this is the thing that some people call the grid. Isn't it?
Yeah. Some people call it the grid. Yeah. But the thing is that if I said to people in a place that had the wireless internet, that the wireless internet existed in that room, and I said, "Where is it?" They'd say, "Well, I can't see it, but I know it's there." Now they know it's there because if they get a computer and log into the wireless internet, then a whole collective reality available all over the world, except in places like China, comes up on the screen. And if those computers did not exist, and I said the wireless internet exists in this room, people would say, "That's ridiculous. I can't see it. It can't be there." But it is. It's just that you can't see it because you can only see visible light, you cannot see almost everything else that exists in all eternity. And so what the body computer is, or what the body mind is rather, is a computer system, a biological computer system in effect of great advancement, which is in effect the computer system that allows us, the real us, consciousness, to experience this reality. Because, you know, people say, "I'm going on the internet." We don't go on the internet. The computer does. We experience and interact with the internet through the computer. And so what happens, for instance, if the computer breaks down and won't take you on the internet anymore, then you, symbolic of consciousness, sitting at the keyboard, well, what do? You just get yourself another computer, and then you experience the internet through another computer. That is, in its own way, describing reincarnation. And what's happened is people have got, because of the way the system in the deep level understands what I'm saying is how it is, they have structured a society which is enticing and stimulating all the time the five senses, because they're the senses of the computer system. And if you can pull people's attention into the five senses alone, you've pulled their point of attention, in effect, into the computer.
So this is a bit like TV executives and reality TV shows. I don't want to make this too mundane, but it's almost like... These days, a lot of TV executives think that all people understand are game shows, reality shows, you know, Britain's Got Talent, all the rest of it. So if that's all they can understand, we give them more of it. Is that an analogous to what you've just told me, David? That we give ourselves more of what we know because the vastness of what we don't know is so great. It's much better to stimulate ourselves with the stuff that we can perceive easily.
No.
Okay.
These things that are put before us, this mind-numbing, intelligence-insulting nonsense that is called entertainment and the media, that's not generated from the population originally. It's what the population were manipulated to be attracted to. Okay. And thus, once you've got them, they become addicted to it, and now they are looking around for more of it, like someone needing a fix. And what it does is it pulls people's point of attention into the lowest level of our experience, and it's a level that can only perceive things being apart from everything else, and people and things being in a state of limitation. This is the realm of I can't, I could never, and all this stuff.
But you're saying that also at the same time, apart from all of that happening, and we've only got to look around London and you can see plenty of evidence of that, and it's quite frustrating to some of us, there is also this parallel thing happening that now in 2012, people are beginning to perceive that those other dimensions.
Yes, because of this truth vibrations phenomenon that I've been talking about and writing about for 22 years.
So how will this be different this year? What peak are we going to reach?
Can I just finish this point? Because it's important that everything is a vibrational field resonating to a certain frequency in its base form. Thus, when you get pull people into the five senses, that is expressed in a resonance that is very, very low and slow and very dense. And thus, you get isolated in these energetic bubbles which disconnect your influence from your true self, the greater self, consciousness, which is viewing this world from a completely different perspective and point of observation. What's happening with this vibrational information change, and it's getting more and more powerful every day, every week, every month, is it's having the effect of breaking up that density. So, as I was talking about 22 years ago, the first people to be affected would be those that were more awake already and in a less dense state of perception and mind. Thus, they're influenced by this change earlier. But what I'm seeing now, and not least over the Christmas break, is I'm seeing the never them, no chance, they'll never people now starting to get it. And people who were absolutely in the density, absolutely in the X Factor game show, this is what life is mentality, are now starting to ask major, major questions about life and the world that they never did before and be open to another explanation. This is what is happening. And this is why we're seeing more and more and more people awakening and questioning the status quo that they took for granted up to this point.
But now, apart from being a spiritual thing, could it not just be a mundane reaction that anybody with half a brain has reached the stage where they are sick and tired of this pap that they're being fed, and they just want to answers to other questions than the ones that those TV shows and all the rest of the modern media can answer? And that's a mundane thing. That's just a reaction to the trash that is outpouring from a lot of these outlets, and nothing to do with spirituality. And yes, I am playing devil's advocate here.
So why didn't it all happen in 1945? Why didn't it not happen in 19, you know?
Because we didn't have the education or the technology.
No, it wasn't that. Hold on a second. The world was at war in the early part of the 20th century. It was at war only a few years later. Now, there's two world wars in a very short time. Then immediately after the war, or the end of the war, you had the bombs dropped on Nagasaki and Hiroshima. And all this stuff's going on. Why weren't people then saying, I've had enough of this. I've had enough in the way that they are now.
Because people knew their place, and increasingly, because we're all more prosperous. You know, you wouldn't believe it if you looked at some places, but we're all more prosperous than we were 50 years ago. We're all much more educated than we were 50 years ago. We're all more inclined to think that our right is to have a bigger slice of the pie in this world, even if that's real or illusion. That simple fact means that we are more able to embrace concepts outside ourselves, if you see what I'm saying. What do you think?
No, that's what I think.
Okay.
You know, 22 years ago, I went public with the fact that this was going to happen in a book called The Truth Vibrations. 22 years later, it is manifestly happening. That is not a coincidence. It's because it's happening.
All right. This is terribly, terribly important. And I wanted to get to this point, and I wanted to talk to you now about this. Here we are, some of us, opening up, understanding more. This is the beginning of 2012. Where will we be at the back end of it, do you think?
Well, this is where I fundamentally differ. You see, when for 22 years I've been talking about this vibrational change coming, which was going to act like a spiritual alarm clock to wake people up from their slumber and their hypnotic trance, which most people have been put in by this system that feeds them these hypnotic implants from cradle to grave. I should be perhaps more than anyone standing up and saying, see, I told you, the Mayans, yes, 2012, I told you. And I'm saying the opposite. See, I think this whole 2012 thing has been massively overplayed, much of it manipulated. And when you dig deeper into this whole Mayan stuff, you realize that the vast majority of the Mayans said this, the Mayans said that, is actually simply repetition, not fact, but repetition that, as usual, because people hear it so often, they accept it as fact. The major or two major implications of 2012 are, one, that this control system could well have plans to manipulate the perception of 2012 to make people think that it's playing out in some way. Oh my God, all that stuff. But the greatest implication of 2012 from the Truth Vibrations point of view is it's not 2011, but it's not 2013 either, or 2014. This is a process that this vibrational information change in the waveform, very base fabric of this universe, in our part of it anyway, is changing, and it's getting more and more with every hour and day and the week, as I've said before.
Okay, so it's not going to be in 2012. Where are we headed then? If this stuff is happening, where are we headed?
Well, by the end of 2012, we are going to see vastly more people awake than are now, because the influence of this vibrational change will have got even more powerful. By the end of 2013, even more people are awakening, will be awakening. 2014, 15, 16, the enormous, incredible, from our perspective now, numbers of people are going to be going through this process of reevaluating their perception of self in the world. Now, it is not an accident, and it is not a coincidence, that at the very same time that this is happening, the control system is throwing everything at us, more than ever before, in surveillance, in control, in the police state, in wars, and what have you. This is not happening by accident, but it is, in effect, a response to this awakening. They're trying to batten down the hatches to hold on to the power that they've had.
So there's a fight going on. Who's going to win?
Well, it's. I hope it's not a fight, because if it is a fight, we're playing with the old paradigm. They want a fight, and if they want a fight, we should not give them.
So it's their board game, and we're going to discover, from what you're saying, if we all become this awake and this aware, we're going to walk away from the board game, because they're playing the board game and we won't be.
Well, that's a good analogy. What is actually we're looking at is that more and more people, as they awaken, do not want to play the board game, but the controllers of the board game that need that to control the mass of the global population, they are trying to enforce and enforce and enforce ever more extremely the board game upon the people. And enforcing it upon the increasingly reluctant people who don't want to play the game. And this is being done through surveillance, through control, through the police state, data. They want data control, so they know everything about us, where we are, and eventually they want a microchip population. And they're even beginning to talk about this now. And the microchipping of domestic animals was a stepping stone, getting us used to it, what I call the totalitarian tiptoe, getting us used to the fact of living things being microchipped. And the idea of the microchip, and I was given chapter and verse on this by a CIA scientist in 1997, that it's not just about electronic tagging and tracking people. He said it's not primarily, although that's important, about the messages going from the chip to the computer system. It's what's coming the other way, because he pointed out that from afar, once we're microchipped, that we can be mentally, emotionally, and physically manipulated from afar, even down to the point where we are taken out from afar, assassinated from afar through the chip. And you see, when I said earlier that the human body-mind is a biological computer system, then it's manipulatable through a microchip. This is why it is possible, as they're now showing, to put a chip in someone's brain, for instance, and then get them to work their computer and go around the internet without anything but their own thoughts. This is how it's possible.
Well, if the technology of repression, David, is so powerful and it's in the process of being used now, I mean, you know, who knows who's being oppressed in this way at the moment? And if there's going to be more of it, how on earth can the forces of enlightenment that you say are also working, how can they help people to transcend that? How can we ever win?
Because consciousness is more powerful, in its true sense, is more powerful.
That sounds nice, but what does that mean? How are we going to be able to do that? How will we be? I suppose it goes back to the question of where is this all going to end up? Are we going to be able to live forever, walk on water, go to the moon in 2 minutes? What is this going to mean?
Well, what it will mean, and when I say, you know, it's all very, when you say it's all very nice, it's actually true. Consciousness is more powerful than anything that they can throw at us, so long as we get into consciousness and out of body mind, which is very, very controllable technologically and through other means. There was that famous story of the scientist from America who went into the East testing the effects of LSD. And of course, people went on these LSD trips and went all over the place. And then he came across this guy, this kind of quote holy man. And he gave this guy LSD dose, and nothing happened. He then gave him what you might call an heroic dose eventually, which should have taken him, you know, into another, you know, universe. Nothing happened. And the guy smiled at him because he was so in control of his own consciousness that he was more powerful than the LSD. The scientist was so taken aback by all this that he gave up science and became a mystic. But this is the power of consciousness in its true sense. And once you break out of mind-body, what we call the intellect, which is the village bloody idiot compared with consciousness, then this is why most academia can't even begin to get it, because they're in a prison called the intellect. But what happens then when you're freed from the sense of limitation of body-mind? Anything becomes possible. Technology, not even in the end do you need technology. You directly manifest through your consciousness. All these things become possible. But we're in a period now where we are in this cusp where the old way, the old suppression, the old control system, the old manipulation of humanity into a sense of I can't, I'm little me, I have no power, limitation, is looking in the eye this awakening. And I've described it as the irresistible force, which is this vibrational change and awakening, coming up against the immovable object, the control system, which thinks it's immovable, but it isn't. And we're going to see that. But it's not going to go quietly. If you corner a rat, it doesn't walk away quietly, does it? It thrashes out because it's desperate. This control system is desperate to get its structure of control, not least microchipping and control of the mind through various ways that I explain in Remember Who You Are, where this new book is coming out, before the awakening gets to a point where their house of cards comes down.
And what would you say to people who are going to be listening to this and will say, you weren't nearly hard enough on David Icke again, who say this is just paranoia taken to the nth degree? What's your quick answer to them? Because they will email me. They always do.
Couldn't give a damn. Couldn't care less.
Okay.
Somebody once said, very true, they said, I may be paranoid, talking about themselves. I may be paranoid, but I'm a paranoid, but am I paranoid enough? And we have a choice. You know, so many people are in denial. Not the river in Egypt. They're in denial of things they don't want to face. It would be nice if what I'm talking about wasn't happening, but it is. And if we don't face it, then it's going to reach its conclusion. And do you want these people you're talking about, do you want that to happen to you and your grandchildren and your children? Well, if you don't, well, get off your backside, open your blooming eyes and start doing some research for your flipping self. You know, this denial stuff is one of the great ways that humans are suppressed, because this is why you can manipulate people so easily by telling them what they want to hear. This is what is one of the major ways that it's done. People don't want to hear that what I'm saying is true, and therefore we have a massive challenge we have to face here. They want someone to come along and say, that David Icke's mad, he's talking rubbish, because they want to hear that, because they don't want to believe and accept that there's any validity in what I've said because of the implications for them. Thus, oh, yeah, he is, isn't he? Yeah, he's bloody mad. And they walk away and get on with it, and the whole thing goes on and goes on and goes on behind their backs. I've used this analogy. I think it's very, very relevant. If you see a tornado coming and you don't want to face it, well, you can dig a hole and put your head in it, in the sand. Mm. But the tornado's still coming. You are now, not seeing it, you're not hearing it, and thus you can kid yourself it's not coming. But it's still coming, and your backside is still in the air. Now, if you lift your head from the sand, turn around and face it, then you can take avoiding action. If you stay with your head in the sand, the next thing or the first thing you're going to know is your backside's going to be spinning 50 feet in the air. It's all too late then. And thus, you know, be skeptical, people. I couldn't care less, because it's your choice. I'm not trying to get you to think anything. What you think is up to you. But the consequences of denial of this are absolutely catastrophic. If you want to face them, stay in denial. That Ike's mad. If you want to be an adult, you want to be able to look your children and grandchildren in the eye just a few years down the road from now, when they say, mummy, daddy, granddad, grandma, what were you doing when all this came in? Then get off your backside, turn off X Factor, and start being a bloody adult, because that's what we need. Mature adult people with open minds. It's the only chance we've got.
So, David, you're going on tour back end of this year, and as I said, places like Hawaii, all kinds of places. And I know for a fact that you pack out halls in all of these places, from London to Chicago and right around the world.
Well, I'm doing a Wembley Arena this year.
Are you? What date?
27th of October.
Okay, I must come and try and see. But listen, those people in the audience,
The point is, though, mate, that Wembley Arena event, we're going there because of the interest. Because where we've been before, great, great venue, the Brixton Academy, 2,500 people.
Yes, it's not enough for the
Yeah, it's not enough for the interest. Now, that alone tells you something about what is happening to human awakening, that you're talking about someone like me talking about this information and far much more.
All right, and just very quickly, those people in the audience there at Wembley Arena, I don't know how many thousand Wembley Arena holds, but, you know, I've been in there. In fact, I once introduced a rock band there, David, but I won't go into that, top loader years ago. So I know Wembley Arena very well. Those people who go away from there, just briefly, what do you hope they take away from the session?
What I hope they take away is remembering who they are, that they are not their name, their job, their life story, their culture, their race. They are infinite consciousness, all that is, has been, and ever can be, having an experience as their job, their culture, their race, and their income bracket. And when we believe that we are those things, that is who we are pulled into mind-body. We're pulled into the computer. We're pulled into the five senses as our complete sense of self and reality. And if we're pulled in there and we are disconnected from the influence of the true self consciousness, then we are babes in arms to have that five sense body mind level of us programmed through the media, through what we bravely call education and all the rest of it, to have a sense of self of the world that suits the control system. Once you move your point of attention into consciousness and you have the relationship that I am consciousness, having the experience as my name, job, income bracket, etc., then a complete shift takes place in your life, in your perception of self and the world, and in your perception of your own power to influence and dictate your own reality instead of having it dictated for you. That's why, you know, it's called remember who you are, because that is the key. If we don't remember who we really are, then we're in real bloody trouble.
David, always a pleasure to talk to you. And I'll tell you something,
pleasure
I always come out of these conversations with a headache. Why? Because you make me use my brain and think. And I'm going to go to bed this evening because I have to be up at the crack of dawn to go and do radio first thing.
Oh,
in the morning.
God, all the best, mate.
Don't want to think about that, but you make
me think. It's horrible.
So listen, if people want to know more about you, watch your website. Remind me.
DavidIke.com.
Pleasure to talk to you, David. All the best.
Cheers,
with everything,
Howard,
that you do. Thank you very much.
All the best.
Always controversial, always guaranteed to be fascinating. David Icke there, an exclusive conversation for The Unexplained, and I always find him interesting, and I always come out of the conversations with a headache. Because that man makes you think. Whatever you feel about what he's saying, you've got to think about it, haven't you? DavidIke.com's his website. My website is www.theunexplained.tv, www.theunexplained.tv. If you want to send me an email, send me a donation to keep this work going, please do that. Thank you very much for your support, for the lovely emails that you've sent. I'm going to keep on doing it for you. Thank you very, very much. And if you want to send me a guest suggestion, please do. Whatever you want to do, be very, very keen to hear from you. www.theunexplained.tv. Thank you to Adam Cornwell in Liverpool at Creative Hotspot for his great work on the website. Thanks to Martin for the theme tune. And as ever, thank you to you for listening to The Unexplained. My name is Howard Hughes. See you soon.